So what we were trying to do was address the sow lameness in the industry today. Many people, or many times you see it quoted between 15 and 20% of your animals may come up lame in a year. We'd like to reduce that. And so our thought was, is there a way that we can come up with measurements that we can do it on a 5-month-old gilt before she's actually went to the GDU, and hopefully save that, you know, the cost of developing her, training her, getting her into the GDU, and then having her fall out too early.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Summer challenges finish your pig performance. Digestrum Finish can help. Learn more at dsm-firmenich.com/finish. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Your pork checkoff is all in on improving U.S. swine health. Learn more at porkcheckoff.org/strategy.
Hello, and welcome to the Swine It podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and today I have Dr. Gary Rohr as my guest. Gary is a research geneticist for the USDA Agricultural Research Service. Dr. Rohr, his career in genetic research started back in 1991 when he was hired by U.S. MARC, or the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center, to construct a linkage map for the pig and use the map to identify genes affecting important swine traits. So over the years, Dr. Rohr's studies have investigated genetic components for meat quality, male and female reproductive traits, feeding behavior, and lameness. So today we're going to talk about lameness. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure. Just a little bit more background. I grew up on a diversified livestock farm in Illinois, raising pigs. Pigs put me through college, so I figured I needed to give back to the industry. And when I obtained a job here at the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center, I was really excited because I think we do some really good work. And the work we're going to talk about today is a grant that was funded from National Pork Board in collaboration with myself and then the University of Nebraska, primarily Benny Moat. And one of his students. So, sure.
In undergrad at University of Nebraska, I became familiar with what goes on at the Meat Animal Research Center. And then as a veterinary student, we got to spend different weeks of sabbaticals out in the field with some of the veterinarians there. So very familiar with the center, not as familiar with all the research that goes on, but I definitely know a lot of research goes on there. So thank you for all of that comes out of there. And I'm excited to talk with you about this study. So we're going to talk with Dr. Rohr about a specific area. So like I said before, he's got a lot of areas that he's done work in. We're going to talk about some lameness and this funded research project that National Pork Board sent his way. So get us started, Gary, and tell us kind of what that entailed.
So what we were trying to do was address the sow lameness in the industry today. Many people, or many times you see it quoted between 15 and 20% of your animals may come up lame in a year. We'd like to reduce that. And so our thought was, is there a way that we can come up with measurements that we can do it on a 5-month-old gilt before she's actually went to the GDU, and hopefully save that, you know, the cost of developing her, training her, getting her into the GDU, and then having her fall out too early. So two of the things that we did was we actually purchased what's called a Gate 4 mat, which is a pressure sensing mat. It's about 2.5 feet wide and 25 feet long. And every half inch in that mat is a sensor, a pressure sensor. And so as we would walk a gilt down this mat, the electronics would be telling us exactly how much pressure is being put in all these different areas. So at the end of the walk, we basically get back values of where all the pressures were being sensed, how much pressure was there, and how long there was pressure. So basically, the computer would then synthesize that into saying, okay, the left foot landed here, and then it landed further down the mat say 3 seconds later. And so it's then measuring how much pressure is on each one of these feet. And a perfectly sound animal, you would expect to put the same amount of pressure on the left front as you do the right front. And you would expect the length of steps would be the same also. And the time that the feet are on the ground are identical. But if you had a sore left foot, you're probably not going to put as much pressure on that. You're going to put more pressure on the right foot. You're also not going to leave that down on the ground as long as you do the right foot because it hurts. And so what the computer system ended up doing is when you get done walking the animals through across the mat, is you then get a value for each one of those feet. So all four of the two front and two hind feet. And if the values in theory are supposed to be somewhat uniform, like 100, 100, 100, 100, but if you had a sore left front foot, you might only get a value of 80 on that front foot. And you'll maybe get 110 on the right foot, indicating that, again, she's putting more weight on that. She's also leaving that paw. It was developed for dogs. So all the software comes back and talks about paws. It really bothers swine geneticists, that's for sure. but it would leave that foot on the mat longer also and less time on the sore one. And so it was a way of us to identify, hopefully, if the animal had some mild forms of lameness that we weren't able to detect in visually watching it. Or also, is there differences maybe in the pressure, or also measure the lengths of each step that the animal would take? The second technology that we used is actually, it's often called the NewTrack, but NewTrack is actually the computer program. I mean, basically all we did was put up security cameras overhead, mounted the roof, looking down on our pens, and then through the NewTrack system, and we had night vision enabled on this, we actually then could watch those animals and what they did for an entire week. The NewTrack system then comes in, looks at all that video, and then calculates how long was the animal every day laying down, how long was it standing every day, how much distance did it travel, and we also recorded how long they spent at the feeder. Very interesting information, very different from what we got with the gate 4 system, because the gate 4 system, we're there and we're walking them across. We see on a typical walk, we'll see them for 30 seconds. And with the NewTrack system, we're looking at them for a full week. And like I say, it is all 24 hours a day. And so we were able to get different parameters out of there. And like I say, really completely different systems, but both we were hoping would lead us into some way that we could identify a female that, while we think she looks sound, actually will develop lameness later on in the production system.
Well, I think that's really interesting. I mean, I was a veterinarian in swine for 23 years, and there were definitely lesions that we would see right in those young gilts that were growing fast that, you know, after they did get lame and either left the herd or had, you know, got lame and didn't respond to any treatment. You know, we saw the osteochondrosis, the, you know, cartilage in their joints often was affected, and you really can't tell that's going on while they're growing if they're sound, but it is still going on sometimes in their joints. So perhaps some of the more subtle things you can pick up on what you're doing. And I think that's really interesting, because I wished I had more diagnostics, right? And when the animal was not lame, to be able to pick them out. So this is perfect. This what you're working on is perfect for those of us who, you know, really were measured off of how many animals stayed in the herd and how those animals are being productive.
I wish I would add your expertise, because we did actually slaughter some of these animals and look at the joints, and I'm a geneticist. I could tell when things weren't right, but I didn't know what was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's all about collaboration. So that's what, you know, this podcast, it's the hallmark of what we're trying to do, is get different people that are in specific areas that all have to do with swine together and talking. So that's perfect.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A Diet Forge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
So tell me about what some of the behavior. So I want to learn about what specific like pig behaviors did you find that might have been predictive later in life on your, maybe I'm guessing maybe from your monitors, your cameras, and the NewTrack system were able to find some behaviors over those that week period of time.
The primary behavior from the pressure sensing mat was length of stride. So it sort of took me back to my judging days when you talked about an animal, a longer strided animal is typically considered a more sound animal. And that was probably one of our best measurements that we had. While we did have the lameness scores for each foot, they weren't very good. Part of the reason our gait 4 data wasn't maybe as predictive as we wanted is because the gait 4 system really needs a trained animal to walk down that mat. We actually walked 3,000 gilts and we have about 4,000 walks on sows. As the animals get older, they behave better on the mat. I'll just tell you flat out, they're very nice. But taking a 5-month-old gilt out of a finishing pen and giving her an open alley and telling her to walk slowly down a certain path is a challenge, to say the least.
And they're curious. So my vision is they're stopping and checking everything out and not really walking either.
That, or they see it and they run like a, like it's a sprint.
Yeah.
So yes, we have some very interesting videos from these. The gait 4 mat, we didn't get as much, I guess, good information or predictive information. I don't know whether good is the right word to use because I don't know how a trained animal would, with whether we would have had better information or results from it. With the NewTrack, I was pleasantly surprised that basically the amount of distance that an animal travels in a day while they're in a finishing pen really does correlate to how well they're going to perform when they get to the farrowing house. Well, for lameness, I should say. That the animals that never got lame actually traveled longer or more distances in a day. We also talked about in the paper that they made more rotations. And first I kept thinking, why would an animal turning more mean very much? But to give you an idea, these animals were traveling almost a half a mile every day in a 20-foot long pen. So I think it's just logistics. You can't travel half a mile if you don't turn. You got to turn around to go to the other direction. So that was really, to me, almost a surprise that a lot of these gilts would average about 900 meters, which is pretty close to half a mile in a day in how much they travel around.
That's really interesting. You know, it makes me think maybe, you know, putting at least your gilts in bigger pens, you know, where they're able to, you know, cause, so we talk about our, you know, what's the best size of pen, right? For different management, you know, procedures going in and, you know, checking them all in a great big pen, you feel like you can't see them all very well because it's so vast and, you know, they could be way at the end and you just don't get your eyes on them. But maybe for this type of, you know, your gilt growth, maybe that's a better thing. That's really interesting, you know, to figure out how does this relate to things in the field. So, you know, what kind of things could you take this, these things that maybe were a little bit predictable, how could producers use those genetic factors in the field?
Not to be too negative on the gait 4 system. The gait 4 system, I don't see being in a commercial operation. My guess is it may have a position in an elite farm and the elite phase of production, but it's relatively expensive and it really is time consuming, especially when you're trying to get them to walk appropriately, I'll say, across the mat. The nice thing about the NewTrack system is it's relatively cheap. Security cameras are cheap. Getting a computer to process it, and right now the computer vision processing takes a lot of computing power. So there is a detriment there. Trying to transfer that data also out of a swine facility that may be in a location that doesn't have a lot of good internet will also be another issue because video data is extremely data clunky, I guess I'll call it. But again, I do think, especially in the genetics providers, people, it's something that they could be probably installing. But the real factor is truthfully what we measured was animals that move more are doing better. So just because we use cameras, there might be something else out there that you could potentially use to measure the same trait that will actually lead to you identifying the better structurally sound animals.
Maybe like a pedometer.
Well, we could. I will tell you, find a pedometer that you can apply to a pig and will continue recording data. Is there actually is an ear tag out there now that may actually work a little bit, but we've not tested it. I've just heard about it. But yeah, pedometers would actually be a very nice way, but we have tried some pedometers just to let you know. And pigs think they're good chew toys.
Yeah.
And the pedometer does not think it's a good chew toy.
That's a challenge with pigs, you know, versus cows. There's a lot of kind of wearable things that are coming out in, yes, in cattle and dairy, you know, especially in the dairy industry, collars and even chips that, you know, you can put in and it'll stay, you know, in their stomach, essentially, right? In the first stomach and the reticulum of their stomach. So, but pigs are a little bit different in that area. So it's going to be a little bit harder for us to figure out how to do these types of data retrieving devices on a pig. But certainly the ear tag. And I have faith that these types of measurement wearable things are only getting, you know, more and more interesting, and we'll figure something out. So, and what you're doing is figuring out what we need to be capturing, right? And it sounds like just movement, just moving, you know, what animals are actually moving the most would be ones to keep track of.
Basically, that's what we found, at least with this study. It was, like I say, a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, very cool. So how do you think, do you think commercial operations would be able to utilize this as well in terms of lameness on even market animals? Or I think starting with a replacement guilt, right, and understanding how to keep them in the herd is what it sounds like probably the way to go, or the first step in utilizing that. Do you have any vision for the future of what else you guys, I'm sure, have brainstormed a little bit on this area?
We have brainstormed. I do think right now the primary application would be in guilt selection. And I'm being a geneticist, I'm a firm believer if we can improve the genetics of the guilt, then the progeny that she produces hopefully won't have as much lameness. I don't think you're ever going to get rid of all the lameness. And in a commercial facility, identifying a lame animal, the only real value for that is to feed that information back to the genetic supplier. To know that this animal became lame, so it had something. If it's a genetic issue, it has something that needs to be taken care of. I don't really see it in a commercial finishing for this particular to know who's going to get lame. There may be other attributes that are important that we could detect with computer vision. And we're not really looking at any of that currently, just primarily because my research is focused on primarily lifetime productivity of the sow. And so that's not an area that we've been investigating yet. But we do envision looking at like feeding behaviors and things like that. And we have several different ways of measuring feeding behavior, but that could be also done with computer vision too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It makes me think that maybe down the line, even research, on, you know, different types of flooring, or like we kind of briefly talked about, you know, pin shape and size, at least for your development area, might be really interesting to utilize some of this technology.
Yeah. Especially like computer vision, I think, talking about finding the right building or right pen shape or flooring or just environment. Pigs will tell you a lot in how they feel if you observe them all the time. And you just have to know what to look for. And the nice thing is with computer vision and the AI programs, you don't need to know what to look for. The computer will figure it out if they're telling you something. Which is some other work that we're doing.
That leads into my last question was, you know, where do you go from here? Will you continue to study in this area? Are there some more things that you want to look at in terms of lameness, or, you know, what's next?
For the lameness project, we did actually at 5 months, we did take blood samples, and we want to go through those and find out if there's some some sort of measurement from the blood samples we can utilize. We've done a few preliminary analyses. They've not been quite as, I guess, exciting as we'd hoping, but I think when we do a final analysis, we'll find some information there. Some of the other things that we're looking at, looking at different technologies, besides regular cameras, which is what this study used, we also use some depth cameras, or called 3D cameras. We're using those in our farrowing house to look at the posture of the sow and seeing how quickly she goes from, say, a standing posture to a lying posture, and vice versa. Part of the reason we want to do that is because we do believe that some of those sows, some of the piglets that get crushed, is because the sow descends too quickly, and probably she's descending too quickly because she's got a sore leg. So that's another area of where lameness come into it. And another thing that we're doing in our farrowing house is we actually have geophone sensors, which are actually earthquake sensors that are used to detect earthquakes, but we've mounted them to the underflooring of our, to the underside of the flooring in our farrowing house. And based on the vibrations that flooring material gives, we can, again, running it through computer programs, and this is in collaboration with a group at Stanford and the University of Michigan, as well as University of Nebraska, they can actually take that vibration data, and we're trying to see if we can predict what's going on above the crate. So we definitely can detect when the sow is getting up and laying down. And anybody that's probably worked in a farrowing house knows what's one of the first signs the sow is going into labor. And she starts getting restless, and she gets up, sits down, gets up, lays down, flops from one side to the other. So we're pretty certain that we can develop a sensor system that could alert somebody that, hey, this crate is getting, the sow in this crate is getting ready to farrow. We also have shown that we can, taking that data, get a good idea when the piglets are nursing. And nursing frequency is, you would like to see a fairly frequent nursing because the piglets will do better. But when the piglets quit nursing or aren't nursing as regular, it's probably signifies there's some issue. One instance that we saw, because unfortunately we had to crop up in one of our crates, was the sow got mastitis. And so when the sow gets mastitis, she doesn't let the piglets nurse as much. The piglets also don't feel very good because when they do get milk, they're not getting good milk. And boy, that data really shows up when you start looking at nursing frequency as well as other issues going on in the crates. So I'm kind of excited about the geophones. Well, I guess I am excited about the geophones, largely because they're really cheap and the data intensity is not as much as what you'd have for something like video. The one issue, though, with geophones is if you put it to the floor of a finishing pen, you really don't know which pig's making that vibration that you're detecting. And so its ability to individually phenotype an animal is restricted to a farrowing crate where you only have one animal in the pen.
Yeah, an individual pig.
But that's been something that's been exciting. But also the depth cameras do a really good job of also predicting what's going on with the sow. And we're initiating a study where we're going to see if we can use a depth camera to actually body condition score sows too. And that's in conjunction with University of Nebraska and Michigan State. So we have a lot of interesting things going on. And I sort of see my role being part of the USDA. I'll give applaud the genetic suppliers. They know how to select for litter size and growth rate and feed efficiency. I don't need to teach them how to do that. I'm trying to look at technologies that they maybe should be taking an interest in to improve their selection programs and or finding novel traits that they haven't thought about looking for. So that's kind of how I see my role here at the USDA is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, sow longevity and or, you know, just you're getting the most out of your replacement animals, right? How do you pick the right ones? Because you put a lot of investment into them, not only waiting for them to mature and be a productive animal, but also just the expense of having, at least in the swine world, a biosecure area to grow them, right? That keeps them protected from some of the bad diseases out there. And so that's an investment in terms of where we grow them as well. So if we can, utilize more of them that we actually place as a young animal, I think that's money well spent. So really really interesting technology that you're working on. And this area is just, exploding in terms of this types of data and being able to, like you said, find an area that maybe needs more work is harder to do on the gene selection side, right? Is the the phenotypic stuff. So really, really neat. Well, very good. So we're rounding our time, concluding our time up today with Dr. Gary Rohr. And we've been talking about swine genetics, particularly some of the research he's doing in the area of lameness and getting some predictability, heritability traits that we can hopefully utilize in production to keep those gilts staying in our herds. If you have any questions or comments for Gary, you can send them through in this podcast platform. If you like what you hear and like our show, give us a thumbs up. We really appreciate that. If you have an idea for our show or any comments for us, send those through your podcast platform. So Gary, before we sign off, do you have any final thoughts or take homes for our listeners on today's conversation?
Well, I guess it was I really appreciate the funding from National Pork Board and the collaboration with the University of Nebraska. And it was interesting working at this, thinking that, when we did the genetic part of it, would we identify interesting genes? And it's nice to know that when we got down to the end of the day, a lot of the genes that we were identifying were genes that had been noticed in humans for either multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis, which is nice to know. They often look at us as a model organism, and well, we can use humans as a model organism for pigs too, because the gait goes both directions. And so that was really interesting, and looking forward to seeing how some of this progresses as we go down the road with it.
It's time for our famous three.
Broiler Savvy, the pioneering AI-powered solution for broiler gut functionality and metabolic efficiency insights. Cargill Animal Nutrition and Health Pork Solutions delivers trusted, data-driven nutrition and business support, helping you build more profitable, confident pork systems. KT Pacer, 50 years designing and building feed transportation equipment focused on quality, workmanship, and performance. BinSentry, the most trusted feed monitoring solution in the world. Every pig, regain control of your wean-to-finish operation. Catch problems early, save pig lives. Aurora Pharmaceutical, veterinary solutions for real-world animal care. Tired of solving swine nutrition challenges alone? The Swine Nutrition Inner Circle connects swine nutritionists who share real insights on formulation, ingredient variability, and diet adjustments. When you need clarity, experts are just a conversation away. Join at swinenutritioninnercircle.com and connect with peers who understand the work you do every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing it with us today. I know I've definitely learned a lot. But before we let you go, the hallmark of our Swine It podcast show is to ask our guests a few questions just to get to know them a little bit better. So tell us your favorite book or resource, your go-to for your area of expertise.
For my area of expertise, I guess I rely on collaborators primarily, finding somebody to talk to. Sometimes internet searches, but I also find they're not always as reliable. but I have a lot of good friends and resources from different areas of all animal sciences and veterinary medicine. Yeah, if I've got a really trying question, I try to find somebody that I think thinks like me, but is in a different discipline, and we try to attack those things. And lately, I've been doing a lot of research or discussions with engineers, so I'm getting into the engineering.
Very interesting. I mean, I think it's great because, there are so many areas of research that are going on and I think they can overlap so much more and be collaborative and just the tiny little, pieces that somebody is working on. It sounds like you definitely use your area of network and collaboration among university researchers, and that's excellent. So what about a favorite book or resource outside of your area of expertise?
Well, again, I'm not much of a reader, so books are not in my forte. But I just, growing up as a farm kid, I liked being outside as a kid, and I still like to be outside as an adult. So I do have a small farm. I've got some cows and garden, and just when I'm not here working, I'm probably outside fencing or chasing an animal of some kind.
Awesome. Well, I'm an outdoors person as well, and it just makes me think a little bit better when I have to go back and do something really tedious or specific. So yeah, good advice. Get out there and enjoy the great outdoors and agriculture. You just you can't take the farm kid out of the farm kid, no. Can you?
No.
Very great. So the last one is, share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
I think especially in the science field is they can never want to stop learning. Anytime a problem arises, I find that, you know, you just have to investigate more. Studying arthritis, I don't know anything about arthritis, and I probably should have had you on my grant so you could have helped me out with the osteochondrosis and things. But, you know, you delve into the literature and you start learning more and more about different things. I'm learning more about engineering technologies right now, machine learning. If I were to have quit learning when I got out of grad school, I would not be a very good scientist today. And so I think you just have to have that zeal to want to know the answer for everything. And it can be sort of an ADHD type trait, which may not be always perfect, but having that zeal to constantly learn and figure things out is I think, a very good attribute, especially in science.
Yeah, I agree. We talk about in our Swine Association, we talk about, you know, lifelong learners and those people, we recognize them, you know, those folks in our association that have, you know, helped us, mentored us as students, mentored us as professionals. And I think as a researcher and scientist academic, that's a trait that we common see, and it's definitely needed to just keep wanting to understand and to dig in even deeper and deeper. So we definitely appreciate researchers out there like you who are helping us find some new technologies that can then be put in the field. Really great to meet you today and to learn about what you're doing, and appreciate you being on our show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much. We'll see you next time on the Swine It Podcast.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.